OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, the first of 5772. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Yom Kippur. The Shabbatot so far this year have been very, very special. The first Shabbat was called Shabbat Shuva, the day after Rosh Hashanah, which was last Thursday and Friday. The second Shabbat of the year is Yom Kippur. The third Shabbat of the year, Amir Tzashem, will be Chol HaMoed Sukkot. The fourth Shabbat will be Shabbat Bereshit, special in itself. The fifth Shabbat will coincide with Rosh Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. And it won't be till the sixth Shabbat where we have sort of a normal run-in-the-mill Shabbat. But we'll talk about that as the show unfolds. Now, there's not going to be a show next week because of Sukkot, nor the week after because of Simchat Torah. If I am able to record during Chol HaMoed, maybe there will be a show for Sukkot and Simchat Torah and Shabbat Bereshit. But it's possible that we won't get to those things. And I was debating whether this show should be a little bit about Yom Kippur and a little bit about Sukkot. I think it's going to be mostly about Yom Kippur because recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 8th day of Tishrei, 5772, corresponding to October 6th, and being the 8th day of Tishrei makes tonight already Erev Yom Kippur, Friday Erev Yom Kippur, and tomorrow night already is Kol Nidrei and the beginning of Yom Kippur. So it's a very, very special time, and I hope I'll have time to make a comment about the impending, soon thereafter, holiday of Sukkot. But let's focus on Yom Kippur. To start us there, actually first, let us do what we always do. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tehiena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Miya Amod. Ki imcha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi, velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi ladonai, mi shomerim la boker, shomerim la boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed vaharbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela leora, umishibud legeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, vinomar amen. Let's get into the mood of Yom Kippur with a rendition of Kol Nidrei by Chazan Yisrael Rand. It's a little long, but it certainly should stir people into the Yom Kippur mood, and if not the day before Kol Nidrei, when? Thank you.
Oh,
Well, I don't know about you, but we've got a little bit more from the moment that I am speaking these words, a little more than 24 hours till we hear Kol Nidre and Shul. And if you're listening to these words before Yom Kippur, you have less than 24 hours. And it's a very, very special day. It's a day that I think people have to realize they should be ready for, but they don't have to be ready for, in order to get something out of the day. There are tremendous number of people who are not committed to a Torah way of life, who somehow fast on Yom Kippur and go to shul on Yom Kippur, and at the moment that they hear the stirring melody of Kol Nidre or any other part of the service during the nighttime and the whole day of Yom Kippur, somewhere inside a spark is ignited, and it's the challenge of the person to fan that spark into a full-blown fire, a fire of passion for Judaism, for Torah, for mitzvot. I don't even know where to start. There are so many, many things about Yom Kippur. Let's go back a little. There's a 40-day period from Rosh Chodesh Elul through the month of Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, the 10 days of penitence, and Yom Kippur. Those 10 days include the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah on one end, Yom Kippur on the other end. This period of 40 days has its origin in that very first year out of Egypt, following the devastating event of the golden calf, where Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 days after revelation at Sinai, came down with the Luchot, the tablets engraved by God, with the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments. When he saw the Egel, the golden calf, he either dropped the tablets or threw them down and broke them. And there was a process of castigating the people, destroying the Egel, and then reascending the mountain, Har Sinai, Sinai, in order to hope to achieve God's forgiveness for the people for this devastating sin. Moshe Rabbeinu, according to our tradition, ascended Har Sinai on Rosh Chodesh Elul and came down on Yom Kippur, the 10th day of Tishrei, with a divine message of forgiveness. That by itself would be enough. With the second set of Luchot carrying the Aseret HaDibrot, that was a great thing as well. And with the challenge a couple of days later to start collecting materials for the building of the Mishkan, the sanctuary to God, and it characterizes the 40-day period as a very, very special day of approaching God when he is near, figuratively. And it became a focus of a period of introspection and hopefully a period of self-improvement. Basically, and this comes from a lot of different sources and a lot of different life experiences, a person could be paralyzed on Yom Kippur into inaction if he thinks he has to become a righteous individual with no flaws. What is actually so is the flawed human being and the flawed Jew has to try to become a better person. I think if listeners get nothing more from this show than that idea, it's very important, because it's a daunting task to recreate yourself. It's not as daunting to do some serious introspection, a lot of prayer, fasting, and making some kind of resolutions. I hate using that term only because in America, the term New Year's resolutions sort of cheapens the idea. Here we're talking about a process known as teshuvah, repentance, which involves analyzing one's behavior, picking at something, recognizing that it was wrong, stop doing the wrong thing or start doing the right thing, regretting all the time that a person had not been doing the proper behavior, and accepting for the future to do it properly, and verbalizing this process of repentance in what we call vidui, which can be said any time of the year, any day of the year, but which has its special focus and special place on Yom Kippur. I mean, the plain act of fasting, abstaining from food and drink for a full day, is well known not to be harmful to a person, to a healthy person, and it's very spiritually cleansing. It allows you to take a step up a ladder of spirituality, leaving more physicality behind, and that is inducive to this kind of introspection that I'm talking about. The prayers are very helpful too, if you're that kind of person, which hopefully you are, and being in a congregation where loads of other people are also fasting and are also praying all day long and are singing along with the chazan and listening to the various melodies which have become time-honored and cherished by many people. All of this should be conducive, especially when we say the words of vidui, to take a look and to start meaning them. There's, for example, emphasis in the vidui on sins committed by improper use of one's power of speech. The gift of speech is recognized as very, very special for human beings, and its proper use is very, very good, and we have many ways in which we misuse the power of speech, how a word or a sentence can hurt somebody's feelings, can damage somebody's reputation, can make a child cower in fear of a parent rather than an overwhelming feeling of love. Speaking nonsense, speaking lies, there are so many varieties of improper use of speech, and that is matched by many references in our prayers on Yom Kippur about sins committed by improper use of speech, and that's not a bad place to start for some people, and say, I will cut down on the teasing, cut down on the sarcasm, cut down on raising my voice in order to lord over somebody, because all of these are basically misuse of power of speech. I will avoid gossip and avoid slandering people. It's an agenda. It's an agenda, again I say, you're not expected to finish the job in one shot, but you are not free, as the words in Pirkei Avot teach us, to slacken off on the challenge. Just taking this one example, use of speech. You'll find one, you find two, you find 10 different areas. There's your challenge. And it goes on and on. In the area of eating, there's a whole variety of kashrut rules and manners, and making brachot when we eat, and saying birkat hamazon after we eat. All of these have situations where people fail or, let's say, don't behave in the most proper way. It's something to work on. Interpersonal relationship. This goes on and on and on. As far as interpersonal relationships are concerned, we have to seriously look at our relationship with our spouses, with our children, with our parents, with our friends, relatives, co-workers. It's a daunting task, but we have to pick at something and say, you know, I've been a little too hard on my children, or a little too rough with my parents, or a little cold with my spouse, and that becomes a target, an agenda, to become a better person. These things are expressed in the words which we say in the Yom Kippur davening, but what must happen is that these words penetrate our hearts, come back from the heart into a very constructive way. I don't know if I'm being too vague, but it's hard to speak about this. But that is the main agenda of Yom Kippur and of Jewish life in general, to become a better person. And there are many, many ways that that will show up. And you have to be honest with yourself, and when you pray on Yom Kippur, it's not just reading the words and trying to keep up with the chazan and the rest of the congregation, however long it takes you, especially if you're praying in Hebrew and you're a fluent English speaker, you should have a translation so that you can read that and even say that. It's from our mouths to our hearts to our actions. That's the challenge of Yom Kippur, and that's the challenge of Torah in general. Keep this in mind, and in the second half of the show, we will try to focus on other aspects of Yom Kippur. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Yom Kippur 5772. Before we get back into the nitty-gritty of Yom Kippur, I would like you to listen to part of a medley, which consists of two different songs, two different, very different moods, and I'd like to explain them both. The first part of the song, the first track, is called Mare Kohen. One of the main focuses of the Musaf service of Yom Kippur, as well as the Torah reading which comes before Musaf, is the service of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, in the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol was an extremely important person in the Jewish world, in the functioning of the Beit HaMikdash all year round, but Yom Kippur was the gem in his crown. He did most of the service of that day. The service was very intricate and complex, and he was not just the star of the show, but it was almost a one-man show. And I don't mean at all to put it down when I say it like that. The Musaf, as I mentioned, describes the Avoda in the Beit HaMikdash, because we are without a Beit HaMikdash. We announce towards the beginning of Musaf, Umipnei Chataeinu Ga'alinu Me'artzeinu, because of our iniquities, we were exiled from our land. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash currently. We pray and hope for its rebuilding. But in the meantime, the best we can do is try to imagine, to say the words, to close our eyes and see if we can catch a glimpse in our imagination of what happened in the Beit HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. The descriptions are extensive, and towards the end of that whole section of Avodat Yom HaKippurim, there is a poem which has been put to music, describing the splendor and radiance of the Kohen Gadol when he emerges from his day's labors in the Beit HaMikdash, especially when he exits the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Holy of Holies, he being the only person allowed in there ever, and only by himself, and only on Yom Kippur, where he enters at four different times. He has special garments that he wears to go inside, four very special linen garments, similar to the regular Kohen's four garments, but quite different in the quality of the linen and the quality of the weave. And he pays for it, by the way, from his own pocket, not from communal funds. They are used one Yom Kippur, and then they are buried, not allowed to use them for anything else. It's a very, very, very special thing. The description of the splendor of the Kohen Gadol upon completion of his Avodah is an alphabetical poem that uses a lot of imagery, let's put it like that. Uvechein ma nedar haya kohen gadol betzeito bishalom min hakodesh. And so how majestic was the Kohen Gadol as he left the Holy of Holies in peace. Like the heavenly canopy stretched out over those who dwell above. Mare Kohen was the appearance of the Kohen Gadol. Like lightning bolts emanating from the radiance of the chayot, like the fringes attached to the four corners, like the image of the rainbow amid the cloud, like the majesty in which the Creator clothed the creatures, like a rose that is placed amid a precious garden, like a crown that is placed on a king's forehead, like the graciousness granted to a bridegroom's face. Beautiful, beautiful poem. Now this can be recited, it could be cantorially presented by a talented chazan in a very somber way that fits what most people think of the mood of Yom Kippur, and it could be presented, and it is in many, many shuls these last number of years, in a very joyous way, which reflects, in my opinion, the mood that existed among the people who crammed into the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash just to be there on the spot when the Kohen Gadol was doing his thing. And their participation was introspection, was verbal confession to God's ears only, was bowing and prostrating themselves at certain times when they heard the Shem HaMeforash, the unmentionable name of God, which only emerged from the mouth of the Kohen Gadol. Commentaries point out that it doesn't say that he said the word, the name. It emerged from his mouth as if he were in a trance. And the mood at the successful completion of the Avodah in the Beit HaMikdash on Yom Kippur was very high. The spirit was very high among the people. And that's reflected in this first melody of Mare Kohen. Then you will hear a transition, and that's why I didn't separate the two songs. I want you to hear the transition to a much more soulful prayer, which is put to beautiful music. To be prejudiced about it, it happens to be one of my all-time favorite songs, Chamol al Ma'asecha, where we ask God to have compassion on your handiwork and be glad with your handiwork. May those who take refuge in you say, when you vindicate those born by you, O Master, may you be sanctified upon all of your handiwork. For with your own holiness, you have sanctified those who sanctify you. It is fitting, that the Holy One be glorified by holy ones. Now this reflects our striving towards a level of holiness on Yom Kippur, which is really unreachable on other occasions or other days of the year. Let's put it in a broader sense. The Torah commands, if you want to say it that way, Kedoshim Tihiyu, be holy. A Jew's whole life is supposed to be a striving towards holiness through the learning of Torah, the performing of mitzvot, the being of a good person. And on Yom Kippur, it's on the highest level that we are able to achieve. In fact, the abstentions from physical things on Yom Kippur are meant to contribute towards the emphasis on holiness, Kiddusha. The not eating and drinking, the not wearing of leather shoes, which really in the old days meant comfortable shoes, rather than going barefoot. Today you have Crocs, and those are very comfortable, and many other things that people wear that don't have leather. But the point of that particular, quote, affliction, called Ne'ilat HaSandal, was the not wearing of comfortable shoes, to have a firmer connection to the ground on which you stand, and to reduce the amount of physicality in favor of spirituality. The not washing and bathing, the not using of lotions, cosmetics, and perfumes, and the not engaging in marital relations, all of which minimize the physicality and allow the spirituality more room to develop. There are some people, this is not one of the requirements, all that I said above are part of the requirements, but there's another aspect. Some people remain awake all night, not even to allow themselves the comfort of sleep. Some people have a ta'anit dibur. In addition to the fasting from food, they fast from speaking, not talking about the prayers and the vidui. That they say, of course, and that is what they dedicate to their power of speech on this holy day. No chit-chat and no idle conversation. Not for everybody, but it all comes together to indicate this striving towards a holier kind of existence. And even if it means right after Yom Kippur going back to the more physical, we don't continue fasting, we don't recommend overly indulging in fasting, pardon the mixed terminology, but we don't believe that. In fact, Erev Yom Kippur, which is tomorrow Friday, is a day where it is forbidden to fast, where it's a day where it's a mitzvah to eat, not just in preparation for Yom Kippur that's coming, but to make a very clear point that we serve God not only with fasting, but with feasting. That little E that's added to the word fast in the right position turns the word into feast, and both of those are ways that we serve God. So Erev Yom Kippur serves as a balancing arm to Yom Kippur. Don't go overboard. After Yom Kippur, you make Havdalah, you drink a cup of wine, you have supper, and it's contained within these 25 special hours. The average person cannot sustain that kind of level more than that, and they're not supposed to. It wasn't meant to do. We'll talk more after Mare Kohen, the transition into Chamol al Ma'asecha, have mercy on your creations.
Yeah.
Lest I left you with the wrong impression, Mari Kohen does not transit into Chamol al Ma'asecha in our prayers, only in this particular medley of songs. Okay, in the introduction to this musical selection, I mentioned what are known as the five Inuyim, the five afflictions of the day. There are also five prayer services of the day, Arvit, at night, preceded by Kol Nidre, which is not counted as a separate prayer service. It has its own purpose and function where it is. In the morning, Shacharit, followed by Musaf, sometime in early afternoon, Mincha, followed by the unique prayer called Ne'ila, the closing of the gates at the conclusion of Yom Kippur. So you have five services, you have five Inuyim. I am not going to make any claims about the coincidence and the same number, but what I want to point out very, very strongly is that Yom Kippur, as well as anything else in Judaism, has significant, important concepts and a lot of nitty-gritty detail. There are Jews, as I've mentioned in the past, who grab onto the concepts and are not really interested in being the nitty-gritty kind of people. There are people who focus on the nitty-gritty and lose sight of the concepts or don't have time to think of the concepts because they're too busy working the details. I am not going to make a judgment value, and I hope you don't either, a value judgment, on which one is better if you have to be one, because our challenge is to be both. I've told the story before about a gentleman who boldly claimed to me that mitzvot, the actual carrying out of the requirements of Judaism, were unnecessary for him, even though they were very necessary for me. And he said, you, to me, need to do mitzvot because that brings you closer to God, and that's the goal. I have achieved a oneness with God through my own methods, which included meditation and running and doing some other things, and therefore I don't need mitzvot. To which I spent hours basically saying to him, nonsense, rubbish, that's not Judaism. Judaism says that mitzvot are goals in and of themselves, and they are means to achieve other goals. If a person, I shouldn't even say it like that, forget that, a person, a Jew, is obligated to keep the details of Jewish law and in the hope that he will master the concepts and reach the greater goals that mitzvot were meant to bring the person to which the person was meant to go. You can't take a shortcut to those goals. You can't go your own way. But within Judaism, within accepted halachic behavior, we do find sometimes changes and deviation. For example, a person who is not physically well is exempt from fasting on Yom Kippur. There are more details that we can't get into now. It depends on how serious the health condition is as to whether he eats normally or has to eat in small amounts and drink in small amounts and space them out in time. Complicated, if you have this situation, consult your LOR, local Orthodox rabbi. But my point is that a person who is physically unable and therefore not required to fast, in fact forbidden to fast, has his way of achieving the same goals. The goals don't change. Because of a situation that a particular person has, he can't do it in the, let's call it the standard way, so instead he has to do it in his special way. But it does not make him any less. Any person who eats on Yom Kippur with halachic permission is no less than a person who is fasting on Yom Kippur. And certainly he is more than a person who is fasting against the orders of doctors. That was just to use an example. If a person, I don't know, gets turned off by standard prayers, that's a lamentable situation, and he has to strive to learn how to appreciate the prayers that we have and grow with them, and he wants to compose poetry of his own in order to achieve the same holiness that Yom Kippur strives to reach, then I'm not too thrilled with that situation. Maybe it's the standard prayers plus the poetry that can do its job, or maybe it'll take a while to teach the person how to pray with feeling and not be turned off by prayer. Prayer has a side to it which is very important, and that is that Jews all over the world are saying these prayers, even if they can't even talk to each other because of language barriers. And Jews throughout the generations have been saying these prayers and will continue to say these prayers, making them very special. I should also point out that almost all of the prayer on Yom Kippur and any time is in plural, because we're all in this together. And that includes Jews who pray regularly, and it includes Jews who hardly pray at all. We are all part of the same people, and therefore our prayers in the traditional wording are very important, because they go for everybody. So you have to be an individual, and you have to get something out of the prayer for yourself, but realize that you're praying for other people. We're out of time, so on that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Yom Kippur, Mo'il, as they say, a meaningful Yom Kippur, and a Shana Tova, Gemar Chatima Tova, and hopefully our prayers will be answered to our satisfaction. L'hishtameh.